shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
And we're back. You're very welcome to Kill Shuffle.
Kill Shuffle.
I'm Donal.
I'm Dill.
And this is our first regular Garden Variety review show since November.
Yeah, this will be a relative walk in the park.
Yeah.
Compared to last time.
Well, our 4.5 hour bumper albums of 2019 special, which is still fresh as a daisy, by the way. So do go back and listen to that if you haven't yet, because it was, I had a lot of fun talking about our favorite albums of the year.
I did, and I'm not over them yet.
No.
No. And I guess, how do we come from that? How do we purpose this?
Well, how else but then with a random grab bag of albums that we discovered over the Christmas?
Yeah. Not even the best, not even the worst. No, just here.
Albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this week, obviously, owing to the fact that, I mean, no, don't get us wrong, some albums have been released. It's the 9th? The 11th of January today. But really, the album release cycle for 2020 doesn't begin really until next Friday.
We won't skip them.
Yeah.
Elephant in the room being the Poppy album, which if you Google it.
Right.
I kinda knew her from her YouTube presence, but
right.
We'll see.
It's
fucking making waves, so yeah, I can't really ignore it now.
Yeah. But no, we're talking about four albums that came out in 2019, throughout the course of the year that we've just kind of came across over the break. So we're going to be talking about albums from Heidi, The Comet Is Coming, Better Oblivion Community Center, and I Built the Sky, as well as our first Time Machine segment of the decade, Rival Schools' 2011 album Petals, which I'm very excited to talk about.
And also a very heavy rest in peace to Neil Peart.
Yeah, I think we should talk about Neil Peart for a minute. Believe
everyone's hero.
Yeah, passed away within the last 12 hours, which is, or at least the news broke last night, which is obviously incredibly sad. I don't think it's very often that you get an artist of, it just doesn't, you know, I feel like Bowie was maybe the last artist of this size that we lost. And personally for me, Neil Peart would have been more my street than even David Bowie.
A genius. As far as my love of fantasy and sci-fi and many weird things in his lyrics that got me to enjoy stuff I do now and play like I do now. He's just an incredible person for the scene. And it's awful to see intelligence die through cancer. Yeah. Regardless of any cancer, but especially when there's so much to give and so much that could have been given.
Yeah.
I always thought.
And, you know, Neil was 67. In this day and age, that's not really that old. And as we were discussing off mic, there are guys out there who are, you know, able to perform at a really high level well into their 70s. And I think it's really sad that we didn't get the chance to see... I don't know, did you ever get a chance to see Rush live?
No.
No, me either. And I came to Rush pretty late, I would say. I know I was very familiar with the greatest hits for maybe the last decade and a half, but it was only kind of through even this show when we did, you know, Clockwork Angels, and that kind of brought me back to the earlier material and really just what a phenomenal band and what an incredible drummer at the center of the band. I think he was the center of the band.
Yes. And still, so he had such an amazing life.
Yeah.
A tragic life at points, but an amazing life to have it all.
Yeah.
To actually have a 40th anniversary for Rush. Like, just that's incredible.
And Rush still sound ahead of their time. I think that's the crazy thing. They sort of invented something, and then even right up to the end, we're still sort of at the vanguard of that genre.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear Dream Theater more and more and more over the years incorporating more Rush into their sound.
Yeah, every zeitgeist sound that they wrote on, they absolutely did the best with it.
Yeah. And I think there's moments in the albums that we're going to talk about today which pay fitting tribute to Neil. And again, it's very easy for everybody to look at an artist when they pass away and sort of say, right, this is the time when I'm doing my Rush deep dive. And you know, but the fact that the morning, before anybody had heard anything, but you know, yesterday morning, I was just thinking, God, Rush are such a great band. Just out of the bit, Rush are such a great band. Soon as we record the next show, that's what I'm going and doing a deep dive on Rush.
Yeah, I mean,
because they're just that good. They're not a band that you need a reason to think about. They just pop into my head every now and again. Just, they're that good.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to him a bit more, which you still can, he has some fucking incredible books that he's written about his motorcycle journeys, his life, and getting over other people dying and
tragedy. Yeah.
Just very important stuff for life that he has written that is still going to be here. So that's awesome to still have. As well as
absolutely.
The music.
Rest in peace, Neil Peart. Truly one of the greats, one of the best to ever do it. So really, really sad news. But we must press on and discuss albums, because that is, you know, it's kind of part of our mission statement here at Kill Shuffle. So without any further ado, the first album we're going to review this decade is called Specimen. It's by the Japanese band Heidi.
And who else, if you have been on the podcast?
No prizes for guessing who brought this one in. They're from Tokyo. They've been making noise since 2006. And this, from the best information I could find online, is their ninth album.
There's a lot of information, but not in our language.
And
even still, small enough band with a big enough following is
sure
what I've heard through the grapevine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So walk me through Heidi and how you came across them.
I was recommended them by people who travel continents to see them. at Darren Gray gig, I was there, and people were like, we've come from Canada, and we've been to Osaka, back in here just to see them. And, you know, they still are seeing them multiple times a year, and I was wondering what was all the hoopla about. And turns out they're just one hell of a visual kai band. I guess the last of that huge breath of visual of VK. I think I've kind of touched upon what visual K is.
You have. It
started with the X Japan, then went with a lot of colorful hair and things that connected to anime openings and stuff like that. And it was very much the most popular of the rock with a nerdy edge.
Because it's visual that a lot of the emphasis of the genre is focused on the look of the group more so than. In terms of is there a consistent sound across?
I think there's equal care.
They don't pay attention to the sound, but I'm just saying, like, is visual kai a sound also?
Yeah.
Does it generally apply to this kind of bombastic sort of anthemic rock meets punk meets metal meets sort of pop? Is that sort of generally how it always sounds?
Yeah, I mean, it back in the day it used to be more kawaii.
Okay.
You know, this is less so. This is more,
some 41-esque.
I guess, yeah. There's a lot of things. It's not got that kawaii edge. It's more of its rock influence in a Western sense as much as it is Japanese sense.
Yeah.
I think many Japanese bands we've heard that aren't as thrilling as you would expect or theatric can follow this.
Yeah.
And still be applicable to many different ears across the world.
Yeah, like, but then at the same time, still be. There's always something that brings it back to that sort of quintessentially Japanese sound, I think.
Yeah.
Even though there are moments, there's certainly like there's lots of stuff on this album that you hear. There's like bits of Saint Anger, I hear bits of like AFI, bits of Korn, bits of like Manic Street Preachers and things like that, but then ultimately at the end of the day the songs do fit into that mold of, you know, what we've come to know as these visual kai bands, or you know, they kind of seem
hard hitting, anthemic, very very melodic, yet there's always something against that as well, always something a little bit more weird.
It depends. The songs like break up into various sections. I do feel like there's a checklist of things that they need to hit in every song. And
I think that's what makes it visual K for me.
Okay.
Like the drums are very visual K. You know that drum beat.
It's the
danceability. Yeah. I think danceability has always been a visual K thing. No matter how heavy the band goes, it's always somewhat danceable.
Mm-hmm. What I call like the block party hi-hats, that like very high speed, that's where kind of, you know, they're he's going wild in the hi-hat, and that's there, and there's tons and tons of like chuggy verses where the verse is like da da
da da da da da da, and one very questionable synth at the very start, I believe.
Extremely questionable. Yes. I believe the synth you're referring to is known as the Mortal Kombat synth.
The stock Apple.
Do 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 do. Choose your fighter. Do 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 do.
But what interests me about this band is they do enough to make that slightly lesser stuff gel completely with the whole different.
Yeah.
World of heaviness.
At points, like there are moments that I don't think the Mortal Kombat synth works. I don't think the bird sound solo.
Which bird?
There's
sound?
One song that where the main riff has this kind of bird sound going like.
Oh, is that not that might be kind of the Slipknot-y kind of a turntable effect in the okay. background? You know that one?
It sounds yeah. I mean,
so it's like a drain a water kind of.
Yeah,
phaser
I
effect.
Guess. I mean, maybe that's what they were going for. To me, it definitely sounded more like an aviary, but
I think it was quite new metal-y.
I was reminded of like the Birds of Prey center at Tato Park, but
I didn't mind it too much.
Yeah, it was quite new metal-y. That's quite a new metal-y song. But there are definitely flashes of moments that I think are really creative. Like, there's the start of one of the songs. I think maybe mm-hmm. Parasite. I can't remember
the later stuff. I think I know where you're
on. But there's a song that Eternal. Otherwise doesn't do much for me, but starts with these really cool sort of distorted, almost funk chords, like really voiced sort of jazz chords.
Yeah,
that's very very cool. I think part of the issue for me is that a lot of them they're so bolted into like sort of slightly metally riff, chuggy pop punk chorus, really like. Yeah. Overly emotionally wrought chorus that I would say is probably angling for an anime anime intro chorus.
They
right?
have.
And then it kind of goes verse two. They'll have some sort of metal inspired solo a la Sum 41. Yeah. But all of the songs, because they hit every single element, all of the songs end up being like five and a half minutes
yeah,
long.
I think the one qualm, I think I understand where you're coming from, but the one qualm I have is they go along for a chorus and a verse too long.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's what I'm saying.
They are pretty damn solid. I think as far as the riffage goes and the clarity of different alternative rock things they kind of do.
Yeah.
Like, you hear that in Ghost, Utopia.
Yeah, Ghost sort of reminded me of Blood Command a little bit.
Eternal,
like,
actually. The second or the third last song, I guess.
Yeah, Eternal was cool. That kind of has like it's a more... overtly melodic throughout that song.
Yeah, it has some very nice harmonies. I like when they get a little bit different.
Right.
They don't go full pedal to the metal. They go maybe slow mid-tempo. And it doesn't turn into a ballad, but it's just a slow,
well, there's only one
song.
Really... Yeah, there's that song, which is like the kind of half-timey. And then there's only one like song you could describe as a ballad. And it only really starts that way.
Is that Imaginary?
Which is Aquarium or Water Tank.
Oh, yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Translate it. That song reminds me a little bit of like 27 or Christopher's River from Biffy Clyro's Black and Sky, which is really cool. Maybe slightly. I wish it had committed to the quietness of the start, because it kind of then goes into like,
it does explode.
Yeah, the metal guitars come out and it's all very like halftime chugs and stuff.
And the production is good enough to not mind that much at all.
Production's good. Yeah. Production's totally fine. And they go full pirate metal towards the end on Candles. There's like a real
I love that. The one that has a lovely harmony.
Or maybe early, if you add a push, you could say maybe like early Dark Tranquillity in Flames, but it's very much
sing-along
dual lead guitar, like everybody put your ale in the air.
Yeah, it's got a march to it. I think it ends with a marching beat, actually.
Yes, I believe so.
That's very cool. And I like the last song, which is full-on punk thrash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a bonus track, technically, but I think it ends the album on a real high.
You managed
high.
To sneak it past me, because I couldn't understand any of the liner notes.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not too sure, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I gotta be honest with you, Dil. I always like digging into these because it does feel like a little window into a world that I have not very much connection with. But this one did feel a little nondescript to me. There were moments I liked, as I described, and there's flashes of stuff that I like.
It's built for earworms, I think, as most anime. Yeah. Stuff can be
but I think generally, even though there were certain choruses that I thought pulled it off and achieved what they were attempting to do,
the mid stuff, some of the mid
stuff. Towards the start I would say Emptiness maybe, which is like track 3 or 4, and then Utopia, which is the next track, I think
Parasite,
yeah,
They commit so
110% to everything that by the time I've heard sort of 11 tracks of where every chorus is like, I'm strapped to a chair and a bomb's about to go off, and if I don't tell you I love you right now, the world's gonna end. Like, everything feels like it's that level of intense.
It's a balls out album that I think goes down. I think this band I'd enjoy a lot more in a live setting. I could imagine really getting down with this live.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it's engineered for. As I say, like, it's supposed to be that chorus that gets stuck in your head or whatever. And some of them do for me, but I just, it's so full on all the way through with only like two little tiny little breaks that I get quite fatigued by it. I just need a little bit more,
a little bit
light and shade. I could definitely,
but you
see
can pick
how,
and choose, thankfully. But I think all the way through, a bit much,
especially at an hour long or whatever. Yeah. just shy of an hour. But I can hear, like, basically my advice would be that, and maybe you can't do this within the genre, but
I think you can.
A lot of the songs that are 5.5 minutes,
I've seen
trim them down to 3.5.
I've seen it.
Get them, you know, if you brought this down to like a 35-minute album, tightened up some of the screws, and like just maybe one or two choruses where it's not
quite
choruses
more so.
The first, I think, are fine. Really? You know,
I think I like a lot of the choruses more.
Yeah,
I think some of the songs take a bit to get a sense of, and they do the choruses enough so that they do get stuck in your head. That is a plus if you like the choruses, which I.
Well, I like that one. That's like,
for the most part.
That's a good song.
Yeah, very syllabic hitting on the dot. I like the way J-Rock does that.
I think he does go for like that high octane quasi rapping at points.
What do you think of his voice? I mean, to me, I thought it sounded like a Japanese Darren Malakian from System. He had that timbre to it.
It just sounds like another one of these singers.
It's serviceable, I think. It's not.
Pete guys that I would say sound pretty like on, you know, like totally normal. And then I would sort of say that the affectations of this style of singing, I do find occasionally rather grating.
I'm not through the world with it. I'm not over the moon with it. I think it's good. It's pretty good. It's not Kyo or One from Tricot.
Or TK from Link to Stay. I do feel like I'm not sure whether at this point whether it's a particular quirk of the genre or whether this is just the way most Japanese men sound like when they sing.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Because so much of what we hit in from Japan is this style of kind of high octane visual kai rock stuff, like anime opening type stuff. So I at this point I actually don't know, but I would love to hear something from like the indie rock scene, yeah, or even that band that you love that are quite small. What are they called? They're quite like While She Sleeps esque metalcore.
Oh, them, Azami.
Azami, yeah. Right? Yeah, I think he brought something a little bit different to the table.
Yeah, they're a bit more raw. I think this is some. I think I prefer, or out of all the visual kai that's come along and stayed, I think this is one of the better ones. Sure. I think a lot of them have a Gazette for me. I think I've dried up a little bit.
Okay.
I think these are better than Gazette. We talked upon them before, Gazette and Lynch.
Lynch, yes. Yes. And I liked a lot of what they had to
I think this is a little bit more. A little different, a little more fun. I like where it sticks into the punk rock visual kind.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's sort of pop punk meets metal meets here's your standing on top of a mountain fighting a bear chorus. Like that's generally the template. There are some cool things they do with delay pedals, and there's some cool things they do with like flange, and there's different bits and pieces that
the later stuff
add some interest. But generally speaking, that's kind of the template. And I think really how well you get along with this album is always going to be how much does that formula work for you. There's certain genres where I love the formula. Like there's that kind of that Bury Tomorrow formula of like that kind of melodic metalcore, but if it's done well, I hit that formula all day.
There was an anime, Maid-sama. I'm not sure if you remember it from back in the day. They did one of the endings for this.
Yeah.
I think that's where I came back. I was like, oh, I did hear them once before, So I guess,
yeah,
you know, they have evolved somewhat.
It's funny they've, how they've that's just a thing, you know, you could say that there are certain artists that try for TV theme openings and endings, but even then, now in the era of streaming, everybody skips the theme anyway. So I just feel like that whole industry that sprung up around trying to get into like an anime opening or ending in Japan is like a totally unique thing to that part of the world.
Well, I think that's just interesting. One in the same, you know.
That the music scene and the animation scene are so interlinked.
It's just a way to get your song out there. It's not like a cash out thing. It's just a way.
No. Of course. And it's like, but it's a very...
But there's beats you gotta hit when you do that.
Because I suppose the difference is that there's no standard length for an opening theme in the West, whereas like you're generally looking at a minute and a half, which is a good chunk of a song to begin every anime. So it's like you can get your band out there if you get one of those, because you get enough of a chunk of your song at the start of the show.
Yeah.
One time, I think it was the only time ever I remember I watched, I think it was called East of Eden, and they had a Oasis song as that opening, which is like the only time I'd ever heard a band that I actually knew from my real life. It's like,
I like when it happens.
How did that happen? Like, what was the deal that got struck there? Who called who? But anyway, yeah, so any other little bits and pieces to tie up on this one, on Heidi?
No, I just I like how they handle the heaviness with the lighter, older stuff. I like how they've injected in the heaviness to this, because they used to be a little lighter and now they're really buckling down with the heavy guitars at bits, and most bits. And then they come back with a bit of like odd alternative stringy guitar, and I like how that combines. And it's pretty catchy, so it serves me fine.
I wish they committed to the funk disco stuff a little bit more, because there's only three or four flashes of it, but
if you went back, it'd be there. And also, I heard recently that they're doing this thing, this go on tour with the band kind of thing, where you can go to... I think they had... my friend's going to it, where you can go to an onsen with them. And during April, and you get to check out cherry blossoms, and it's a very Japanese fan based thing to do. I love the sound of that, but that's awesome.
A VIF package, a very important friend.
That's an interesting way to do it that no other country does.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think American bands would do that kind of VIP thing. It wouldn't trust that for shit.
No, I would not trust. Cool. I don't want to trust King 810 to take me to see Cherry Blossoms.
No.
Okay.
That's pretty cool to be in touch with your fans like that, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite track?
It's the second last song, including the bonus track. So
Candle. Are you the pirate metal song? Okay, cool.
Because I love how the chorus harmonies work. It fucking slams.
All right. Good stuff. I'll take Emptiness.
That's a very good one.
It's a good song.
It's a high 7 for me.
Okay. Yeah. 7? You could take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink the J rock water. So I will I'll give this a 5. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. Because there's, like 6. I said, flashes I enjoyed, but overall the formula just wore a little thin for me.
That's fair.
So that's Heidi with Specimen, although if you, like me, are an English reader, it says Type B, I think, is part of the title. So there you go. All right, moving on. We'll do one of mine now. Yes. Let's talk about the Better Oblivion Community Center record. Yeah. Self-titled for album from pretty new band. They're from LA, made up of Connor Oberst and Phoebe Bridgers, both of whom
are well-known-ish, right?
Yeah, pretty well-known in the sort of indie folk scene in their own right, especially Phoebe Bridgers. And this album is... really sort of has taken off for them, I guess. Unusually so for a debut, but because it comes from two reasonably established artists. Is that why? Kind of like a super group type thing. Yeah, I think it's just really struck a chord. I heard about this record through the Bitchin' Brew podcast. It was one of Brad Thorne's sort of high teens in his top 20. Just thought it sounded intriguing, so shout out those guys. And it is super intriguing album. Not a million miles away from the Howdy album, I think, that we discussed towards the end of last year in terms of, like...
I mean,
very acoustic, very organic, but, you know, the songwriting is there, I think, and a lot of it kind of plays off the combined vocals of Connor and Phoebe.
Very much so. There's no one in the same less. Like,
yeah, they're pretty much 50-50. I'm not sure how the songwriting splits, but it sounds like it was all written in a very collaborative way.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I suppose maybe when I push play, you kind of get into didn't know what I was in for, and it's this lovely, you know.
Yes, it is lovely.
Yeah, it's really nice kind of very lyrically interesting acoustic ballad, and I kind of thought if it was a whole album of those type songs, it might not really be worth covering. But because there's quite a bit of variety, you've got, like, you know, synth, and then there's some really turned up distorted guitar points, and there's like a waltz track, and there's enough in here to keep you interested all the way throughout the runtime. So I'm super interested what you think of this. you look like you've got something to say.
I'm struggling to find things I like about this.
Oh, interesting.
In my most honest hot take of the year,
by so all far. Means the iron is hot, so strike.
I like Exception to the Rule and Forest Lawn,
okay,
kind of stuff. That kind of stuff. And Big Black Heart. I like when they get the thrash level.
Big Black Heart finishes on a big, like, clattering,
buzzy,
fuzzy, washed out kind of ending. Yeah.
At the end of this, I was wondering why was that not a little bit more prominent in this, or just scattered around, not just directed to the start and the end. As it is in Sleepwalking, to an extent, and Big Black Heart, which are the two more hidden ones.
And you also mentioned Exception to the Rule, which is that boom, 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 the kind of synth wave almost.
Very dreamy and interesting.
So your favorite moments on the album were the moments that were a little bit more turned up.
Yeah.
And a bit more, Whereas I actually prefer when they take it right down on, like, Chesapeake.
It's hard for me.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
No, I get it.
Mainly because it's very bleak.
Do you think?
Kind of.
Yeah.
It feels that.
That's interesting.
It feels like,
Now, there are super bleak moments.
The lyrics get me.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. Like, the lyrics that hit very hard for me is Service Road, which is about Connor's brother who passed away at pretty young age, I think like 42, sort of drank himself to death. That, you know, and actually in the last sort of couple of months, there have been like friend's cousin and a next door neighbor and a relative of that guy, all of whom had the same fate, basically late 30s, early 40s, just, you know, heavy alcoholics, and passed away through really for no other reason.
Sure. So it's maybe not for me to rag on this album,
because it's so personal, I think, for the artist.
It's an incredibly heavy hitting, not in the sonic sense, but in lyrically mostly.
Yeah.
And
then the other one that sort of I felt quite strongly about was Chesapeake, that I said earlier, which is about, sort of starts off as you're the kid going to a gig with your dad, you know, standing, sitting on his shoulders, and then later on it kind of explores the pitfalls of, like, a musician's life and how, you know, you can kind of wind up washed up and that sort of thing, or how you can begin, you know, your first concert could be something in an arena, and then you're worshipping at a band that's playing to, like, nobody in a house or something.
Yeah. So it's that stuff that really got me, like,
yeah,
I need a bit more levity, man.
Yeah, so, I don't mind, because I'm a miserable bastard. So yeah. I don't mind that sort of
as far as
overwhelming.
It does get quite emotion. Emo with its lyrics.
Sure.
Or vocally, I'm not saying it's quite. What's that band? The other one. That sadly got taken off some people's top 20s lists a bit back.
Brand New?
Brand New, yes.
Ooh.
Kind of felt like lyrically for me.
I get you.
That, not self-deprecating, but it wasn't lending itself to a lot of positivity.
Yeah, but then I think that you got like a happy, really happy track like My City, which kind of reminds me of like Mr. Lee or something. Yeah. Off the Howdy, that boo ba da ba doo 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 doo. It's real like walking down a sun dappled street.
Oh, I was praying for moments like that to hit. Okay. And a couple of them did.
Sure.
Yeah. Exception to the rule, of course. Dylan Thomas, to an extent.
Dylan Thomas, again, is like a really lovely, I think it's quite a happy, upbeat track. And some, again, some super interesting lyrics. There's like a thing where he talks about, it sounds like going to the a rally for like a dictator or something. Yeah. Talking about when we went to see the general, and the crowds were there and they couldn't see through the confetti. And, you know, I like those little, even though I don't necessarily always know what the song is about overall, I like the little snapshots that you get through the lyrics that always sound like, our first track is a great example, didn't know what I was in for. Like, the first thing is, I can't take a picture of this guy begging on the side of the street because my camera doesn't have my phone doesn't have a camera. Mm-hmm. And then it moves on to, I'm being wheeled away in a straitjacket because I can't help the refugees on TV. And then it moves on to like vintage clothes store owner who pretends to cry at the news but actually doesn't really. It's just, you know, these little vignettes that I think are cool. I'm not saying this is the greatest album of all time. I know it's not.
No.
But what I did, I found it really interesting, and I kind of kept coming back because every time I listened there was something different that stood out to me. It's not a song with like one sort of sonic palette that runs all the way through it. There's enough fire in the belly on certain tracks, and then they can bring it right down to like the bare bones of others, and that's kind of
and I just think they bring it right down for a bit too long.
Fair.
Just not my kind of music.
That's okay.
Cannot judge.
I
can't judge.
All right, we're 0-2 so far.
But I like the guitar work quite a bit.
Yep.
I really like how that goes. I don't know who plays the guitar.
Not 100%. There is a list there's a list of contributing musicians I did not write down. Sorry.
Seemed quite fair read.
The producer is a guy called Andy Lamaster, who's worked with Bright Eyes and Michael Stipe from R.E.M. Yeah. And he's in his own band called Now It's Overhead. So
yeah. And the first song was cool with the way it used extra instruments that you wouldn't expect, like the synths, the kind of word in underneath it. It was oddly spacey.
Great.
Yeah.
A little Arcade Fire vibe to some of it too, I think.
Yeah.
But again, pull back. Mm-hmm. Pull back. Favorite track?
I would say Big Black Heart.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
I'm such a sucker for that, that sort of happy country emo sound, so I'm gonna go My City.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if this would be, I don't know how I can conceive it being a top 20 worthy thing if I were to ever conceive it, so that's how far removed I am from it.
Yeah. No, I can see it wouldn't be in that ballpark for me, but I can totally see how albums that are so lyrical, I think, and so personal can really hit you where it counts, and can elevate almost beyond what's obvious from just listening to the music, I think. You know, I think that's, this is one of those.
Yeah, I think I'm just wired differently.
Yeah,
okay. It's an oddity. Like, I tried to really like this.
Yeah,
I tried to almost like this. So I don't know.
It's all right.
I tried to understand it, and I didn't. So yeah,
that's okay. Score to 10.
I'm giving this a 5 because that's how we roll.
That's apparently how we roll, and I'm gonna give this a high 7. So far we have flipped the card over on its back. So that's Better Oblivion Community Center, if you want to check them out. And the album is self-titled.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of,
I, also one thing folk. I don't get how this doesn't have a bad review on the internet at all,
because it's good.
But I looked around and there was no person who would review this who wasn't already totally locked in for a high 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5.
Well, I feel like this is one of those like one of those movies on Rotten Tomatoes where it might have like a 90% rating. There might be some 3 out of 5s in there, you know, but all positive. I think it'll be very difficult to give this album a review that was less than 50%, because I think there's enough there.
No way I can be scathing about this.
No,
I wouldn't bring it under 5.
And like I say, I think it's really good. So my review would be one with the tomato.
Yeah.
So great. So it's a better Oblivion Community Center.
I'm just a garbage factory of reviews towards sleepy music.
Yeah. Trust me, I always look, so when I don't like something, I'm the same as you. Like, I will plumb the depths of every forum to try and find a dissenting voice. I actually did it with you know, I didn't love the Nick Cave album. Not that I didn't like it, but I didn't love it. And
you gave it a good review.
The Nick Cave album?
Yeah.
I think I gave it a 6.
I think you gave it a 7. I think you gave it a 7.
I'll have to listen back.
I was like, oh my god, he gave it that? That was my memory.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay. We were 2 points
apart?
Apart, yep.
So you gave it an 8 though.
And you gave it a 7.
I gave it a 6. Okay, it doesn't matter, right? I'm pretty sure. But
Donald realizing he likes Nick Cave a bit more than he thinks.
Eagle-eared listeners can go back. I appreciated the sincerity of the album, but musically it wasn't really for me. So, I mean, I plumbed the depths of the internet to try and find anybody on any forum that sort of came at it from a similar perspective. There was a few, but no official reviews. That album has a platinum record from review-wise. So I feel your pain. Except for, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, anyway, let's move on. The next album, we'll ping back to a Dylan album, is, I think it's called The Zenith Rise, is that right? Is that
The Zenith Rise, depending on what.
Yeah, Zenith, whatever you want to call it. The Zenith Rise by I Built the Sky, also known as Rohan Stevenson from Melbourne, Australia.
Australia, man.
Yeah. Australia, man. They're on fire.
Yeah.
That was important.
No. But the best thing I think about the musicians in Australia is that they're really trying their damnedest to save the place.
Yeah.
With what they can. We've seen it with musicians like Amanda Palmer who still play there.
Right.
Like during the time for them.
Oh, yes.
To give them something and to lend to.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, no, it's it's devastating what's happening in Australia, and my heart goes out to them. Yeah.
To the point, I love the spirit of Australian bands and musicians more than many countries in the world. Like there's
we've talked about some really interesting, I mean, even the last like 2 years, I think there's been some fantastic bands coming out of Australia. Like they're really having a renaissance at the moment. So this band, I saw somebody on online describe this as cloudcore, which I think is perfect description of that style of artist.
Something of this decade.
Very much like there's a sound, I think, to like bedroom guitar virtuosos who do absolutely everything and kind of self-record.
Yeah, and there's a line to be drawn between guitar wankery and then guitar virtuosos that know how to bring a song to life with.
Yeah.
And I would say
that
stuff.
I would say that line runs right through this album.
I think this is one of the best of them. I'll go straight out the bat with it's one of the most interesting of those takes.
Yeah.
Like even I have a short fuse for virtuoso albums, going like, I wonder when something different comes with. Yeah. I won't name names, but there are out there.
Well, I'll name names in terms of just this is the sonic space we're existing in here.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about C2I, Pliny, Animals as Leaders, Intervals, Scale to Summit, Disperse, Joe Satriani.
I think Scale to Summit a bit less. Joe Satriani, a bit more to the classic 90s jam style. This is definitely of the new era of trying to push any boundary they can within this realm.
Well, that's the thing is when you have a completely blank canvas and no band members to sort of input, like this is one man's creativity splashed out over an album with no limits in a way that kind of reminds me of Devin Townsend in a lot of places actually.
Yeah, I like when people can have take that opportunity and run with it.
Sure.
Because they can do whatever the weird shit they feel without being second-guessed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless if it works or not, it still will exist.
Yeah.
It's why so many awesome writers of novels are out there with weird stuff, and as opposed to co-written stuff.
Yeah.
Which there are many as well, but plenty of weird stuff there. I really enjoy this one.
Absolutely.
I
me too.
I want to hear what you have to say first, as kind of a...
Okay, first impressions, right? Yeah. First impressions, I think
it goes places.
It goes. This album goes very hard from the start, and it doesn't let up that much until the final three tracks. So my first initial impression of the album was like I'm exhausted, and then there's like three tracks at the end which are like a come down.
That's true, but I also think a lot of the songs start pretty somberly and
That's what you get on
and build and
on repeat listens. Is you start to hear
Wormhole Traveler, for instance.
Yeah, you start to hear the downtime on certain tracks. Even on the first track, Up Into the Ether, mm-hmm. which is quite peaceful to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like there's the Devon style breaks, there's you know,
the genre clashing.
And
oh boy, there's some that I really enjoyed. I think that was Wormhole Traveler's real kicker, was the black metal.
Well, yeah,
double bass.
Yeah, comes in with the blast beats.
That was a lot. That's some of the best energy I've heard from a song.
It happens on Up Into the Ether as well. I wasn't expecting to hear flashes of like Mull, for example, that we discussed a couple of years ago. Like that kind of tremolo picking blast beats that then feeds back into a more sort of euphoric, high octane metal thing. There's little bits of Fall of Troy too, and some of the guitar stylings.
Oh, yeah.
Where he'll go like, runs on the guitar neck.
Stellar Evolution was the one at the end that has the fuck yeah, I love that so much.
Oh, she,
like that end segment is,
I knew you'd like that,
amazing.
I see. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
so
yeah.
kick ass.
It's good. Actually, that's one of the moments
very,
that really
very, very Megadeth,
very Dream Theater. I would say actually, I'd say there's tons of Journey to Aurora has tons of Dream Theater as well. You know, that sort of John Petrucci.
I can hum a lot of this, which I can't say for a lot of virtuoso albums.
Yeah,
like
there's even moments like that reminded me of Soilwork too. Where there's like harmonized guitar and it gets quite amped up and quite metal. Now it's not super super heavy. There are like moments where you get that metallic kind of sound, like Darkest Hour, Counting Days, Soilwork.
Yeah.
But then
Stars and Darkness, Zenith Rise.
Yes, yeah, Stars and Darkness. Those would be the two that are the kind of heavy ones, and the ones that I would say would benefit most from having a guest vocalist to do some screaming, actually.
And I'm sure that might happen in the future, depending on who you get.
Fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. But I like the end, and I like the start, 3, quite a lot.
I'm with you there. I think
the acoustic ones are exceptional.
The acoustic ones are exceptional.
Starting with the Only Way Out Is Up, which is technically acoustic-y.
Well, that's...
It brings it down.
That's more, I would say that's more like Jake Bowen.
It's a bit more chill, which is glad to see that there is a gradual.
It's not acoustic guitar. It's a slow jam.
Yeah, I'm glad he took that slope to get down to the acoustic stuff. That's a nice touch.
I'm glad it works for you.
Because it's not...
I'd rather have them peppered in. That's the sequencing is my main issue with this. I'd rather have
maybe
moments of... Like, I'd rather have, you know, a burst of Stellar Evolution followed by maybe... a little bit of downtime in a Moonbow, followed by another like Aurora, whatever, and then a Diamond Dust. Like I prefer, I rather than it feels like a mistake to me is to have like all of the really intense,
maybe not
high octane shit.
I think depending on your mood. I mean, I like that whole coming down from the party end of album thing.
Yeah,
that not a lot of bands do. A lot of bands follow the same template, which is. Album could easily do and did before in the last album.
It's entirely his prerogative. I mean, you know, he might say I think it's like played out to do like heavy song light song, but
yeah,
I just find that a more pleasant listening experience. But that being said, the acoustic songs are excellent and they sit right in that.
He's as good as acoustic guitarist as he is every other guitar that's in his all artillery.
Yeah. It's very much in that Candy Rat Records, like Andy McKee, Antoine Dufour space, that so like much. That finger style space, but with more bells and whistles.
I'd love to hear a whole album of acoustic stuff, not just the big stuff in this.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are two of the strongest tracks on the record, and the way he uses strings and everything is really, really strong. I even hear a little bit of Matt Stevens, especially on the last track, who's... my personal favorite of he's not a fingerstyle guitar, he's more like he uses acoustic guitar chords and loops and things like that, but it was really nice to hear a little bit of that
this
album.
I Built the Sky really plays into more of the riffage than the guitar wankery, which I appreciate a bit more as being more of the rhythm guitarist of my life.
I agree. I think that's when he's at his best is when he's doing more interesting things with the rhythm guitar. I do think the few times when he does indulge himself in just pure guitar wankery, it can feel a little bit academic more than musical.
Yeah,
but it's only true. A couple of times.
But thankfully, you feel these songs, which can't be said for a lot of guitar wankery, which is, you know.
You know what I think would inject a little bit more feeling, and I know it's something that's quite logistically difficult for these type of artists. I would love to hear a real drummer. There's nothing wrong with programmed drums, but I do think there's a certain sound that it gives these albums that really sits them in the bedroom space. When I think if you were to give this guy, like what Pliny did with his EP or whatever, you remember that EP with Cole and whatever.
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, wow. If you can like expand that canvas out to bring in more musicians and go into a studio and really like get a drummer to inject their own creativity into it, because I think there's a certain sound that
it's
virtuoso guitarists give their drums, if you get
me. I think the drums are getting there, though. There's enough
room. No, they're perfectly serviceable.
Well, there's enough room replicating techniques for reverb and stuff
that
can get you there, but you know,
no. There's no program drums are a great thing. It's just like I'm just saying what could at this point, what could somebody like I Built the Sky do to like push them over into that next gear? And I think that would probably be it, because like as far as what you can do in, you know, with like, you know, your MacBook and your guitar or whatever, like this is probably this is the as peak. Good as it gets.
Yeah, some people don't have the luxury for drums.
No. But I think I I'm glad you brought this one in, because like the more you listen, obviously it's so dense at points.
I've been with it for a while.
It takes a while to like pick out the stuff that you like, but then once you've kind of done that, you know, it stands.
It's one of the more memorable ones, I gotta say.
Yeah. This is definitely my favorite of that pack, except for Dispersed, but I think they exist in a different. They're much lighter, more melodic.
Yeah.
They're not. Yeah. I wouldn't really call them metal, whereas this is definitely like a metal record.
All sorts of metal as well, which is good.
So, as far as like instrumental, cloudcore, love that term. I think it describes it perfectly. I think this is a cut above a lot of the rest.
Yeah.
So it's very good. Yeah. I enjoyed this.
Favorite song, man?
My favorite song is probably the first one, actually. Up into the Ether.
Nice. Yeah. Mine's Wormhole Traveler.
Yeah, Wormhole Traveler is real good. Real good.
Structured very nicely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10.
I'm going to give this an 8.
All right.
It's pretty fucking good.
Okay. So that's I Built the Sky, The Zenith Rise, Bang Your Head to It. It's good. All right.
Outstanding. Like, if I created an album like this, I would be set for life. As like can't even conceive that thought. But hey.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Okay, last 2019 album of the week is, again, it's another gear change. The Comet is Coming from London with their album, I believe it's called Trust in the Life Force of the Deep Mystery.
It's not even the latest album they released last year, according to what I just checked.
I think they released an album called The Afterlife, which I haven't properly checked out yet, but I think The Afterlife sort of stands as a... Do you remember like what Portico Quartet did,
or what maybe Bring Me the Horizon just did?
Yeah, exactly. It's not an EP. Like it supposedly the Afterlife is a full album, but it comes from this, or a Steal This Album to Toxicity, that kind of thing. Like same sessions, different collection of songs, that sort of thing. So this is not the most recent album by The Comet is Coming. This came out in March. The other album came out in September. But this is the one that everybody was talking about at the end of the year, and this is the one that I put the time into, and it's the one that I really love. So Comet is Coming, it's a 3-piece. I'm going to give them their stage names because they're awesome. You've got King Shabaka on the sax, Danalog on the keys, and Betamax on drums.
It sounds very 70s for a reason. Is that not a thing?
Impulse Records, who broke John Coltrane back in the sort of 50s and 60s. I hadn't thought about Impulse Records in so long, so it's great to see that they're still churning out exciting stuff. Yeah, I would say that there's definitely a real 70s vibe to this, but then I would say also that it's extremely 2019. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I hear as much
one eye and the other
jazz as I do grime and dubstep and hip hop and jungle and drum and bass. Like this is a very for a jazz album, it's moment to moment, I don't hear much jazz. It's like, it's a subversion of jazz, I think.
Yeah, it's like chopped and screwed jazz from the 70s, a band playing from the 70s,
yeah,
who has their foot right in the door to 2020.
Yes,
yeah, like, it seems like a lot.
It's like kind of like Miles Davis' Bitches Brew. Where
there is a mind to it.
Yeah, where you're like, you have to call it jazz, but they're doing so much else that it has a broader appeal, I think.
It totally does.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's loosely, it seems to be loosely conceptual. The three guys have a real, they love like space mysticism and that like kind of kitschy pulp sci-fi aesthetic.
Yeah.
So that's so obvious from that, because the end is really the beginning, the first track. Yeah.
The last movies of the 70s, Dune, stuff like that.
Yeah.
All the unknown knowns of sci-fi in the 70s. I love the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And that leads to the music very heavily.
2001, like the dawn of man. Yeah. And then you get into Birth of Creation, which just... Oh, so many songs this album just kind of make you want to move, you know. Mm-hmm. It's got that like hip hop swing. There's so much in the fact that synth is one of the main instruments, that it's not like it's not sax and piano. It's like it's sax and synthesizer.
Sax, piano, then it does a very clever thing where it kind of peppers in a bit of samba, and then it goes full on to that as the album ends.
Yes.
For the last five or four tracks,
yeah,
which I really appreciate.
Super Zodiac almost kind of sounds like space bebop.
Yeah, Super
like
Zodiac. Yeah,
it's this.
It's really got octane. Almost a drum and bass, but in samba of the future.
Yeah,
of the future of the past.
Yeah.
They do that thing. Freaking Tupperware remix party. Have
100%
their mind. Is that
it's funky? It's disco. Yeah. The one that everybody talks about is Summon the Fire, which I have to say it is such hot sax. I mean,
it's pretty stunning.
That sax is sizzling on that track, and it's
because when he plays it definitely takes front stage.
Yes,
right.
And that's what I'm saying, why I think it's so 2019, the way that King Shabaka plays the sax a lot throughout this album, including on that track. It sounds like rapping. That's the crazy thing. The way he plays the sax, like
I see that.
The rhythm, the rhythmical way that he plays, and the fact that oftentimes he might just like hit on
percussive.
One note. It's really percussive.
Yeah.
And it's very reminiscent of sort of spoken hip hop, which I think is so cool. And then you get a bit of spoken word on Blood of the Past.
I like that.
Kay Tempest like sort of recites a poem. She's like a spoken word poet.
It's very evocative of definitely what it's taken from. Yeah. Very modern as well.
Quite Black Mirror-esque, I would say.
Yeah, that's what
it feels like, very dystopian. Mm-hmm. That's a lovely track.
Yeah, there's a looming sense of, I wouldn't say dread, but there's an ominous looming something over this. A comet, if you will.
A comet, it's coming. Yeah. But then, again, I never expected to hear references like, I hear it's like Skrillex on that track. You know when the guitar comes in and it's like, and the drums are going, and it's again, it reminds you, it sounds like a drop, which is not something that you very often hear in jazz music. But then it pulls it back and it gets very classy, and I think that the latter half of the album has more of the sort of the classy material, your Unity and your Time Wave Zero. Yeah. Which is the more like...
I do like that a lot.
Cruising altitude.
Yeah. I'd say I almost like that more, but as a whole, I like it all. I like what it does, and everything lends to everything pretty well.
Yeah. And there's so much going on. I think it goes to a lot of different emotional places. I don't think it's perfect, but it really makes me very excited about the band and what they can do.
Oh, yeah.
Like even on a track like Unity, it's totally different to the rest. It's this really peaceful, almost sort of Afrobeat, sounds like you just walked into like a lush green planet and discovered all this new life and everything.
Or sorry, it was Astral Flying, which had the kind of drum and bassy samba, I think. And it was also very loungy.
Yes.
So they juggle a lot of stuff at once.
They do,
but it doesn't sound too jarring.
But they segue, they segue really,
and it's a very album. Like everything runs into each other, which is cool.
Yeah, and I think that's intentional. It's supposed to be, roughly speaking, some kind of story of creation, like that band The Ocean, except not prog metal.
This is progressive, but in a different, much different sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I like stuff that can be progressive and challenging, but also be a bop. And that's what a lot of this album
reminds me a lot of King Crimson, but with less guitar.
Yeah. No guitar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's another like, we're so used to the instrumentation of like guitar, bass, drums, that hearing sax, synth, drums, and hear it be done so convincingly and to sound at times so familiar but also so alien is cool.
And these guys played in Ireland.
Sugar Club,
they played the Sugar Club back in March.
Okay.
Which, way before the time we noticed them, unfortunately.
Yes. They don't have any gigs scheduled, but I would say definitely keep an ear out. This is a band to see live.
Mm.
Like, because you just know that they'll improvise new things, especially on some of those longer tracks. And it's, I mean, I love seeing live jazz because it's just one of those genres that translates so well to, you know, to like the club scene. Yeah. So, yeah. Great. So that's, what's your favorite track?
Favorite track is definitely Astro Flying.
Yeah.
And Time Wave Zero. It's stuck between those two.
Okay. I would probably take, Some of the Fire. It is, it's just so great to hear that. Reminds you of like late 2000s, almost reminds you of like Pendulum or The Chemists or something like that. Makes a jazz. Very, very cool.
It's an 8 for me.
Definitely. Yeah, it's an 8 for me too. At last, we agree.
Yeah, any qualms would be, I wish they hit a little harder at points when they get real heavy.
Okay.
If heavy is a good term to use.
Yeah,
like intense. I almost wonder what if they went a bit more onto the Pendulum side. Almost wonder how would that go.
Yeah, with the drums, I suppose, because they're coming from a jazz tradition, it's pretty unorthodox to do that. But it would be cool to hear, for sure. Yeah. So it's an 8 from the two of us, and the album is called Trust in the Life Force of the Deep Mystery by The Comet Is Coming. And there's even a whole new album since this one to listen to from them.
Two for press one.
Very exciting band. All right, that's it for new-ish releases. We just have time to hop into our time machine for the first time since November and plug in 2011.
An old favorite.
Yeah. This is an album, so the album is called Petals, not Petals, even though the cover of the album is flowers, but Petals by Rival Schools. This album came back into my consciousness just because I was putting together albums of the decade, and I realized how high up this one was going to be. Bit of a sleeper hit, I guess.
And then even more so from Quicksand coming back.
Yeah, we went gaga over the new Quicksand album, which, as we said at the time, drew very liberally from the Rival Schools sound, not so much from the early Quicksand sound, which was very hard-edged, kind of quite turned up hardcore, whereas, you know, it was very much
the new Quicksand seemed like a Deftones,
like a flash. Lush rich, deep kind of post-hardcore failure, and that's really what Rival Schools take to the nth degree on this album. So
it is.
This album came out after a very, very long gestational period. Their original release, United by Fate, which is the album that everybody talks about, and it's like it's a 10 out of 10 album. It's a stunning album. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. but that album, you know, that had a couple of hits. Used for Glue became like a sort of a rock disco staple for a while. It was played on MTV quite a lot, and the band was kind of considered a supergroup at the time because Walter had come from Gorilla Biscuits and some of the other guys had come from bands like Youth of Today and CIV and stuff, and that was when post-hardcore was kind of at its heyday. So I think United by Fate has gotten a lot of love, but then the band fell off people's radars because their second album was supposed to come out around 2003. Well, the demos were compiled and put out in 2013, so those demos got abandoned for years, and we've only just heard them. It's actually, they're great, and there's actually songs that were from those sessions that ended up on this album.
So what was Found?
That's what Found is.
Yes, Found is technically a new album. But
Found is the lost 2003 sessions, and there's Big Waves and Sophia Loren, which ended up becoming Shot After Shot of this album.
That makes sense.
Were reworked. So those were two songs that survived from those sessions and survived into the Petals, which was a reunion tour.
Something to be said for
really wanting those songs to survive.
Yes.
After all those years.
Because they're two of the strongest songs on the record, I think. Which brings us to 2011 and Pedals, which is the band reformed, playing gigs and writing together again and eventually coming out with this, which...
It's astonishing.
Depending on the day you ask me, I could say is
favorite
maybe...
Favourite album of the decade, maybe?
Of that year? Almost certainly. Absolutely, yes. And I think one of my favourite albums of the decade and maybe better than United by Fate. I just think this is... Well, what do you think, Dil? Because I brought it to you, so...
I think it's as good as anything from that era. When it comes to like the solo work of stuff, like Ken Andrews' stuff.
Yeah.
Some of his other bands... This is head to toes with that.
Yeah. Ian Love just knocked it out of the park. I think he's the electric guitarist in the album. And he finds, even though these are quite, oftentimes quite unusual post-hardcore songs and a lot of them are quite acoustic-based. He finds a way to pepper in a really great solo into most of the songs.
Yeah, and then he can get fucking as heavy as freaking Heidi, for instance, that kind of chordy, like riffage,
comes
out of nowhere, which I enjoy.
Yeah, is it 69 Guns that starts with the like there are some big,
very
beefy riffs.
Nirvana,
I think what makes this album really special, and it was something I only noticed, even though I've listened to it like dozens of times. Sure. Something that I only really noticed last night when I was out kind of making my final notes is that it's the whole album all the way throughout is balanced between acoustic and electric guitar.
It is.
Which is such an interesting, it's such an interesting sound for a post-hardcore band. Because it just adds that layer of richness of like acoustic melody.
It never becomes too much, right?
No. And another thing I love...
Half tranquil, half balls to the wall heavy.
And people sort of said that they'd gone too melodic on this album, and I couldn't disagree more. I think it's... Walter Schreifel's, is a great sort of hardcore frontman, but I just think he's got such an expressive, emotive voice, and he really sounds like he's seen some shit, and that's... that's part of the New York swagger of a lot of this album. Like, Choose Your Adventure.
Shot after shot. A lot of good stuff to say, lyrically as well.
Yes, a couple of lyrics that I think that stand out to me, because this is an album.
You probably have
these ones too, but
probably.
On like Shot After Shot, I love that chorus. Love doesn't know anything, only believes what it believes.
That's the one.
Small Doses has lots of lines on
Real
I love.
Sing-along.
Yeah.
As well.
The day will come when my medicine works. These days I feel like a snail without a shell. I think is great as well. And just, even the big, big alternative rock chorus is like ring it out. I'm going to ring it out every ounce. I'm going to do the right thing when the right thing counts.
Something in the air when Ken and him did just made music?
Because
they both have that
It's funny that you
vibe.
Bring it up. I never...
It's totally a vibe, right?
I never put... Failure and Rival Schools in the same sentence, but it's funny that you mentioned Ken Andrews, because last night I was listening.
I'd say more so Year of the Rabbit to an extent.
Or Year of the Rabbit, yes, Year of the Rabbit. I was like the end of Small Doses and The Ghost Is Out There, the last two tracks, quite Ken Andrews-esque.
I mean, what was the latest solo album he did?
Seeds of Lost Satellite.
Yeah, that.
Yeah,
totally of an energy that I really like with this.
Yes. And, gets me in the feels in a similar way to songs like The Pineal Electorate off the new Failure album. Mm-hmm. Like that, that song, I just think the part, the ghosts out there, that psychic kids try to understand. There's a bit where in the middle of the chorus, out of nowhere, there's this absolutely gorgeous picked chord right up the top of the guitar neck. And every time it just hits
gets me. Gets me in the feels, but doesn't. Absolutely depress me. That's how I want it.
because for every Racing to Red Lights, which is like those emotional songs, and then you get something like Choose Your Adventure, which just has like that Prince sex organ right in the middle. That ba-da-da, woo! It's just the hot organ. It's great.
So unusual. I'd almost imagine it from a solo person making this.
Yeah,
not a band.
I see what you mean, yeah. But then,
And I almost imagine a band to be like, is that a weird thing? Should we have that weird thing?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, they went for it. Which I like.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. But I do think, I think it feels like a band. Because
it does. It does.
There's so much personality in every instrument.
Yeah.
Even on, you know, I think it's, is it Ringing Out, the first track? Yeah, when you have that, it's a bass line that almost sounds like Morse code. You know, the boo, 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 boo. It's very, very, very fast picked bass. Which again, you know, like it's every part working almost slightly independently. The drums really come from a very New York swagger place in a lot of places, and then, you know, and then the guitar is a more Ken Andrews type deal in a lot of places. Ken Andrews meets, like, I don't know, some sort of virtuoso.
Who produced this?
Them.
Oh,
they, yeah, the producer on the, if you look, if you look at the liner notes, it just says the producer is somebody called Riva Ulchk Ools. So it's just like the name of the band spaced differently. Yeah, yeah. Pseudonym. Mm-hmm. So yeah, self-produced, sounds absolutely huge.
It does.
Some great use of the whammy pedal as well in some of the solos, and just to keep things interesting, like guitar effects. Like I said, big waves, one of the few moments the album that has like a bit of a piano to it as well. 69 Guns has it as well, but that a huge chorus, just like, over my head, big waves will burp. Like, these are melodies that get stuck in my head all the time.
I love it, and I wish I could have caught this band live.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're buried now or what. What's the deal?
Quicksand are back. So,
you know. And are the Quicksand still back?
I don't know.
Oh, I hope so.
This is right.
It's still the same kind of. They lend to the same.
These are, you see, I talk about these all the time, so, but, you know, this feels like an impossible album. It's one of those impossible albums. It shouldn't have happened.
But it's thank the heavens.
Thank God it exists.
Because it's one of the best.
Yeah. Like we say with the Failure Reunion records, it's like every time they do something new, like if Rival Schools were ever to release something else.
The Failure are two albums into their back to.
Yeah,
basics. It's great.
It's. I love these albums that drop out of the ether, and you just sort of go, "Oh my god!" Like we never thought we were going to hear what Rival Schools sounded like in 2011, and it turns out they sound quite similar to how they sounded in 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, but with a bit more polish.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just I've so much love for Rival Schools.
Oh, and I hadn't listened to them for a while since this album really kind of. Hit. I was pretty young when it. I think I listened to it first at around 2014-13 was when I kind of found these guys.
Yeah, that's probably similar for me.
Yeah.
You know what they reminded me of, actually, that, you know, we went absolutely nuts for a couple of years ago, is Parrish.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I think Parrish have a similar ability to mix, like, a beautiful sort of aching melody with the heavier guitars at times, lighter acoustic guitars at times, and a bit and a playful energy, which this has all the way through.
Yeah, if you're gonna write real sensitive, heartbreaking music, be playful.
Yeah,
it give it a bit of playful.
And energy. Actually, there's just one song I want to shout out in particular that I haven't mentioned yet. It's A Parts for B Actors. I just think
that's an interesting one, right?
I think it's one of the most sort of longing songs. It's like I can't even really explain why, but it's in the title. It's like. He's sort of imagining this reality where
impossible everybody reality. That's
struggling for something just automatically gets it.
The impossible reality.
Yeah. You know, and just there's something about that. It's just the way he sings it. Like some of the lyrics, they're not easily decipherable. Some of them are, but it's just the way that Walter Schreifels conveys whatever he's saying. It just always makes it feel real. To me, anyway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's something that he carries over to Quicksand as well. On that album is fantastic. I'm so glad Interiors exists.
Yeah.
But I want a Rival Schools reunion.
Yes.
Want it now.
It's hard to get both.
I want it now.
It's hard to get both.
Get out. You know that their name comes from a fighting game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
For the PS1, I think.
It's insane.
And
you can name anything.
It was called Rival Schools United by Fate, and the first Rival Schools album is called United by Fate.
That's awesome.
So shout out Walter, Ian, Cash and Sam, all phenomenal musicians.
Still listening to you, won't stop anytime soon.
Nope. One of the best sort of output to band ratios, if you get me. Like, it's, there's so little to listen to when it comes to rival schools, but it's all good. So mm-hmm. one of my all time faves.
Yeah, spectacular.
Glad there's absolutely no dissent here. We just both love it.
Yeah. It's not a bad album.
What's not
there's
to
nothing,
like?
There's nothing wrong with this album at all.
No, it's a perfect album.
I mean, unless you sort of supergroup with Ken Andrews, that's my only complaint.
Bring Ken Andrews in, get him to produce the third record. Yeah, no, it's just because I was so happy to hear, because I've talked to I talked a little bit to Stephen Hill about, because he loves Walter Schreifels and he loves this album. Yes. And then Renfrew from Riot Act mentioned it as one of his honorable mentions in their yes. album, The Decade Show.
Yes.
So I was like, great that, you know,
necessary.
Two guys with a bigger platform than us anyway are also big Rival Schools fans, because great band.
Yeah.
Okay. Great, yeah. What is your favorite track?
Jesus Christ. Are you kidding me? Yep. What's your favorite track, first of all? You go first.
So many songs that have a real personal meaning to me, and it actually almost depends on the day.
Okay,
I'm gonna go Ghost Is Out There, the last track. The Ghost Is Out There.
Alright. Yeah. I think it's Shot After Shot for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
For that chorus.
Love doesn't know anything.
Mm-hmm. It's great. So good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Driving, real driving.
That's one of the heavy ones.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, yeah. Okay. This is non-negotiable. If you check out one album from this week, it's Pedals by Rival Schools. Go check it out. It's just one of the best. It's brilliant. There's nothing wrong with it at all. It's so much variety. It's a great rocker. But sort of post-hardcore, sort of alternative rock, just pop. It's great. Thank you for joining us for our first show back. We will be returning to
with
your
official
ears
new stuff soon enough.
With official new stuff. I think we've got a new Vukovie album to look forward to. As you said, we've got the Poppy album to review as well.
Which I never thought I'd be saying that. Ever. But lo and behold.
Yep, new And They Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead. So lots and lots to get excited about.
Those three are concrete. I'd say we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. But thank you very much for joining us in this A Brand New Decade. If you do want to follow, you can follow us on Spotify. That's probably the easiest way to get the show. But we're also available on all podcast platforms, and we're available on all social media. So hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. We're just called Kill Shuffle, and you can follow the playlist that we use to prepare for the show and listen to all the albums that we cover by typing Kill Shuffle into Spotify as well. And that's what the playlist is called. So thanks for joining us. Hope you're just fine. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.